Welcome to the Shir Tagumim, Parshas Tetzaveh. There are a few sponsors for the Shir tonight. First, Eliezer and Debbie Krupnik, marking the yard site of his mother tonight, Sarah Tzreino, Basarav Eliezer. Shomer Shadav Eliezer, Shasim Moshe Nachas Ruach, Notar Mitzvah, Samaisim Tovim, that the family is involved in. Also, it's sponsored for two other yard sites and by Judy and Aaron Mitrani, marking the yard site tonight of Judy's mother, Sylvia Stein, Tzivyo Bas Lieberman Alevi, as well as by Rosa Silver, marking the yard site tonight of her father, Baruch Mandelkern. Again, all the neshama should have an aliyah, should see much nachas up in the Tarmis of Samaisim Tovim that the families are involved in. So I want to start off tonight talking about the word rechitza, washing, and how it's translated by the Targum, in particular the Targum Onkelos. We started speaking yesterday about Perek Choftes, which describes the miluim, the inauguration of the Kohanim, the making them into Kohanim. And in Perek Choftes, Pasuk Dalad, we read, V'yes Aaron, v'yes Bonov, Takriv, O'Pesach, O'Olamoid, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, should bring Aaron and his sons close to the entranceway of the O'Olamoid, V'rochatzta Osam Bamoyim, and you should wash them with water. And if we didn't know any better, we would assume Moshe Rabbeinu has a hose. You know, just he hoses down Aaron and his nephews. Okay, you know, all day's work. Rashi comments over here, and again, this is not unique to Rashi. This is really the way the Torah Shebaal Peh understands the term v'rachatzta. You should wash them. Zot vilas kol haguf. This refers not to washing in the sense of taking a shower or washing down, but this refers to toveling in a mikvah. V'rachatzta in this context means that they should tovel, they should immerse themselves before they begin the process of being dressed for the avoda. Okay, so that's one usage of the term v'rachatzta, or rechitza, of washing. Then a little bit later on, we find yet another usage of the term. So that same perek, Pasuk Yud Zayin, so the various animals are being prepared as karbonos. One of those animals is a ram. So the Pasuk says, V'eso ayil tinateyach l'nesochav, you should chop up the ayil, the ram, into pieces. V'rochadzta kirbo uchra'ov, and you should wash the innards and the legs of the aisle of the ram before preparing it to be brought as a carbon. Now again, if we're going to be consistent over here, so virachatsta over here should also mean immerse the parts of the carbon in a mikvah. That, in point of fact, is not required by the halacha, by the Torah Shebaal Peh. There is no requirement to immerse the parts of the animal, you know, the limbs of the animal in a mikvah. It would seem strange to us. We should note, however, the Medrash actually addresses this directly, raises the possibility that just as rachatzta with regard to Aaron and his sons means really tevila b'mikvah, maybe it means the same thing with regard to the limbs of the karbonos. So the Medrash establishes, Medrash Halacha establishes, that it's not true. The word rechitza, although in both cases it translates as washing, in one case means immersion, in the other case means just simply washing out the limbs so that they can be physically clean when they're brought on the Mizbeach.
Was the purpose to differ most of the Tahara for the human beings as opposed to the Hamers being different? You ever hear that the Tahara, the reason for washing the men was for Tamar and Tahara?
The reason for washing the?
The men.
It's Tahara, right.
But you never learned about Tahara, to make the animal Tahara.
Well, I mean, we nowadays only tovel people, with the exception of Tefilas Kalim, you know, for kitchen use. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, items became Tomei, and all kinds of items would be toveled in order to make them Tahar for usage. That included, you know, utensils, that included garments, you know, there were all kinds of things that were being brought to the mikvah back in the time that the Beis HaMikdash stood.
So these points right to point and someone from the sponsor of Shavua, it's big day to whom now these were various types of garments that they had for the, you know, the Kohan and other people who wore these.
Right, so the Kohen Gadol had 8 different garments that he wore that were special, and the rest of the Kohanim wore 4 different garments that were special.
Okay.
Right. So again, so the word rechitza, again, the Torah Shabbat Peh tells us means 2 different things depending on what is being washed over here. So it's interesting to note that this difference is reflected in the Targum. If one looks in Pasuk Dalid, the Targum translates V'yas Aaron v'yas Benoi to karev l'sram mashkin zimno, you should bring close Aaron and his sons to the gateway to the Oel Moed. V'sasche yoson b'mayu. The word v'rachatzto is translated as v'sasche, which again, generally speaking, carries the connotation of washing, but as we'll see, seems to mean immersing. And in contrast, in the later pasuk in Yud Zayin, V'yasdichro tefaleg le'evrohi, cut up the ram into its parts. U'sechalel gavei uchra'ohi. There the word v'rachatzto is translated as u'sechalel. Now what's the difference between v'saschei and u'sechalel? So again, based on what we just explained, it's reasonable to assume that the first translation means you should immerse the Kohanim. The second translation, usechalo, means you should clean, you should wash in the sense of cleaning out, of cleansing, you know, washing them down as opposed to immersing them. But what exactly is the connotation of these two words specifically, v'saschei versus usechalo? So there's a chizkuni in the beginning of Parshas Vayikra, where there's also a lot of discussion about washing the limbs of the karbanos, and he makes the following observation. The word v'saschei, he argues, means you should immerse, and he says it's related to the word shoche, which means to bend over. Again, it's you have to massage the word a little bit. In the Aramaic, it's a samich, but the samich and the sin are somewhat interchangeable. The shin and the sin are somewhat interchangeable, particularly if you're from Lithuanian origin, right? So v'saschei, he says, is related to the word shechia, which means to bend over. And he says the reason that word v'saschei is used to describe immersing in a mikvah is because when a person would immerse in a mikvah, they would bend down in order to allow the waters of the mikvah to cover them completely. So that's the term in Aramaic that's used to describe immersion. The word usechalel, which is used by the Targum Onkelos in order to describe washing out the innards, washing out the parts of the carcass of the animal, he says, is related to the word cholol, which means empty. And he explains as follows. What are you washing when you wash out the limbs of the animal? You're not just washing off the exterior dirt, but particularly in terms of the inner cavity of the animal, you're emptying out all of the dung and other refuse that's basically inside of the animal. You're cleaning it out. And as you're rendering it hollow and empty, that's usechalel. You are emptying it out of all of really the garbage, you know, that's inside of the animal. So says the Chizkuni, it's noteworthy how each of these Aramaic terms captures a different meaning of the word v'rachatzta. One is to immerse, one is to clean out. The Torah uses the same word for both, but the Targum Onkelos is pointing us in the direction of the Torah Shebaal Peh, that, you know, in one case we're talking about toveling in a mikvah, in the other case we're talking about just cleaning something out, you know, in a much more mundane kind of fashion. That's the Targum Onkelos over here. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel on the first rechitza, describing the tevila of Aaron and his sons, adds in a few pieces of information that are very interesting. He writes, this is in Perek Chof Tes Pasuk Dalet, V'yos Aaron v'yos Benoi tekarev l'sra mashkin zimna, bring Aaron and his sons close to the gateway of the Oel Moed. V'sitbol yoson. So he minces no words. He uses the word v'sitbol. You should immerse them, from the word tevila. V'sitbol yoson. You should immerse Aaron and his sons. Ba'arba'in sa'in. In 40 se'ah. Demayin chayin. Of live running water. Now here there are a couple of things that are interesting about this translation of the Yonasan ben Uziel, where clearly he's not just translating, he's sticking in extra pieces of information into the Targum. We know that the measurement 40 sa'a is a measurement of the amount of water that's required for a mikvah. Again, 40 sa'a, I tell people, if you want to envision what 40 sa'a looks like, you know, unfortunately the best way to visualize it is to think about how much water would fill up a coffin. I mean, it's a little bit morbid, but 40 sa'a is basically the amount of water that would cover a person just barely. So if you think about, unfortunately, you know, the dimensions of a coffin, of an aron, you know, so basically that's what, you know, envelops a person just, you know. In other words, it pretty much covers the person and not much more. So about, you know, our mikvahs today have much more water than 40 sa'a. 40 sa'a, to immerse in 40 sa'a exactly would be rather uncomfortable. You'd really be crouching your body into something that really just covers the person. We have much, much more water than 40 sa'a in our mikvahs today. Okay, so he adds the idea that, you know, the immersion that's taking place should be in 40 sa'a. But then he adds, it should be in mayim chayim, in living or running water. What's mayim chayim? So, of course, if you live in this part of the world, you say it's seltzer. What do you mean? But halachically, what's mayim chayim? So the halacha draws a distinction between two different types of bodies of water in which a person can immerse. We're familiar with the term mikvah. Mikvah literally means a gathering of waters or stagnant water. The water in a mikvah is supposed to be stagnant, right? In fact, you know, one of the things that's very important in building a mikvah is to make sure that there are no cracks in the side of the wall where the mikvah is, because the cracks could allow a very, very small amount of water to seep out. And even if it would take years and years and years for all of the water to leak out of the mikvah, the water would be moving. And the fact that the water is moving presents a problem in terms of the kashrus of the mikvah. The mikvah means stagnant water. There's another type of body of water in which a person can immerse that's called a mayon. A mayon means a stream. A mayon, of course, is running water. And, you know, of course, the mayon only works when the water is running. Most mikvahs that we have today are a mikvah because the water is stagnant. There are a small number of mikvahs today that are actually built to be connected to a mayon. You typically wouldn't notice this immersing in the mikvah itself because the place where you immerse, the water is stagnant, but that water is connected to some kind of underground stream, you know, which has been unearthed in the construction of the mikvah. If you go to Passaic, I believe the mikvah in Passaic is actually built on top of a mayan. A couple of other mikvahs, you know, around today that are built on top of a mayan of running water. And typically speaking, a woman who's toveling as part of her observance of the laws of Taharas HaMishpacha could either go to a mikvah or to a mayan. There's a finite number of times where the Torah says that it's not good enough to go to a mikvah. You have to go to a mayon in order to be able to achieve tahara. One such example is a zav, a man who had a certain type of discharge from his reproductive organ. Such a person who becomes tamei can only be metaher himself. He can only make himself pure by going to a mayon. A mikvah would not be sufficient. And nowadays, whether or not a person is a zav is really irrelevant. Again, most of the laws of Tumah Vatara don't really have too much practical relevance today, right? The only person, the only two examples of people who are obligated to go to the mikvah, one is a woman who has to become tahara to her husband, the other one is a ger or gioras who's becoming Jewish. And both, you know, both of those examples, they're allowed to go to a regular mikvah, they don't have to go to a mayon. But when the Beis HaMikdash stood, if a man became a zav, the pasuk says that he can rachatz b'saro b'mayim chayim v'taher, right? He has to immerse himself in mayim chayim, in running water, in a mayon, in order to become tahor. So here the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel writes that the kohanim, when they prepare themselves for their service, it's not simply enough for them to immerse in a mikvah. That much Rashi told us. Rashi says, tvilas kol aguf, they have to immerse themselves. According to Rashi, it sounds like they could use a mikvah, they could use a mayim, whatever works best. The Targum Yonos HaMenuziel tells us that, I guess because of the unique and historic nature of the Kohanim being inaugurated into their service, it's not enough for them to immerse in a mikvah prior to beginning their service. They have to immerse in a mayon of mayim chayim. They have to immerse in a mayon of running water. So that's a chiddush, that's a novel idea of the Targum Yonos HaMenuziel, but one which he introduces sort of nonchalantly, you know, into his translation of the pasuk. That's one interesting point of the Yonos HaMenuziel. There's another interesting point in this Yonos HaMenuziel, which does touch on a little bit of a practical halachic issue even today. We know that there's a requirement of 40 sa'ah for a mikvah. Is there actually a requirement of 40 sa'ah for a mayon? It's not entirely clear. Again, it may be sort of an irrelevant point, practically speaking, because again, as we said, 40 sa'ah is a very, very small amount of water. But theoretically, let's say you had a stream that was very very shallow, and the person somehow could immerse in a part of the stream and get his whole body underwater, but it would still be a little bit less than 40 sa'ah in which he was immersing. The Rishonim debate whether 40 sa'ah is a requirement for mikvah alone, or whether it's also a requirement for mayon. Shulchan Aruch, the beginning of Hilchas Mikvah, seems to assume that we paskin you need 40 sa'ah for a mikvah as well as for a mayon. But the Bir Hagra there in the beginning of Hilchas Mikvos writes that, and he goes through all the Rishonim where he says that, you know, many Rishonim seem to assume that the requirement of 40 sa'ah is uniquely for mikvah and not for mayon. Here you have the Yonos HaMenuziel seemingly tipping his hand with regard to this debate and saying that there is a requirement of 40 sa'ah even for immersing in a mayon, right? It's you know, that's why he brings in the 40 sa'ah, but he also says that the Kohanim have to immerse in a mayon, in a stream, prior to assuming their role as being Kohanim. So again, you know, in these few words in the Yonos HaMenuziel, he's introduced a novel idea in terms of understanding how the Kohanim were obligated to immerse themselves, and he's, you know, stuck his head in the middle of a debate among the Rishonim about whether 40 sa'ah is a requirement by mayon in addition to being a requirement by mikvah.
Where are they getting running water in the desert?
I'm
thinking they're in the desert.
Right.
They're not near the water.
Right.
And you want, okay, if you say you're mikvah, they get a well, however. But to get running water for running water, and you're telling me you want, that's what you, Aaron and his sons are supposed to do in the middle of the desert.
Right.
Something's, you know.
Right.
Missing something.
Right. So back in the day, all of the old Chumashim would always translate the word midbar as wilderness. Right, that was the old, all the Chumashim. And, you know, we always thought, you know, what do you mean wilderness? Don't hack me a Chinook wilderness. Desert, we know what a desert is. Right, but the truth is those old translations were more correct. Because when you and I think desert, we think the Sahara Desert. You know, it's like, I mean, I've never been there. You know, maybe we'll have a short trip one day to the Sahara Desert, I don't know.
The Negev is good enough, right, so, I mean, you know.
But you know, there were wadis that they encountered. I mean, even as they were wandering, and they weren't in the Negev, you know, they were probably wandering around the Sinai Desert in that area. But, you know, there are wadis, there are areas, you know, you can find running water here and there. Plus, the topography may have been a little bit different back then than it is now. In other words, I don't think we could assume that the way a certain area looks today, you know, is exactly the same way that it looked, you know, back in the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So, you know, it wasn't overflowing with water, but all you need is to find one wadi, you know, where you could immerse in running water, and, you know, that would do the trick. You know, that's, I think, just the easiest way to address that question. Okay, so that's in terms of, you know, starting off with Rechitza and Mikvaos. I wanted to take a look at another translation of the Targum Onkelos, which also is subtle, but we see where the Targum Onkelos introduces an idea from the Medrash, from the Taurus Shebaal Peh, into his translation of the Pasuk. He's describing in Perek Chavtes, Well, Perek Chof Tes is describing the process of the miluim, how the Kohanim are inaugurated, and then after describing that process, in Perek Chof Tes Pasuk Mem Gimel, the Pasuk says, "Ve'no'adati shama livnei Yisrael," and I, Hashem, will appear there. I will come at appointed times there to Bnei Yisrael, to the Mishkan. V'nikdash b'chvodi. What are the words v'nikdash b'chvodi? What do those words mean? So Rashi writes that v'nikdash, which is most easily translated as it will be sanctified, right? It will become holy. It's referring to something else. Rashi says that refers to the Mishkan. V'nikdash ha-mishkan, right? The Mishkan is going to be sanctified b'chvodi, with my glory, says Hashem. What does that mean? So again, continuing Rashi, shetishre shchinasi bo. My shchina, my divine presence, is going to rest upon the Mishkan. So v'nikdash b'chvodi basically means that, you know, I'm going to come, kavayochol, says Hashem, I'm going to cause my glory to rest upon the Mishkan, and that is going to make the Mishkan holy. You know, it doesn't become holy until Hashem puts himself, again, kavayochol, as it were, you know, into the Mishkan, so, you know, that's what's going to happen. The Targum Onkelos translates those two words, v'nikdash b'chvodi, as follows. V'iskadash, and I will be sanctified, bikari, with one who is precious to me. I will be sanctified with he who is precious to me. So what does that mean? I will be sanctified with he who is precious to me. So if we continue reading in Rashi, Rashi writes as follows, Umedrash Agada, right? The way I just explained the pasuk, v'niktash b'chvodi, that the Mishkan will be sanctified through my Shechina. That's the simple reading of the Pasuk. But there's a Midrashic interpretation of the Pasuk, and that's as follows. Al tikre b'chvodi, elo b'mchubodai. Don't read the Pasuk as if it says b'chvodi, with my glory, but rather b'mchubodai, meaning with those who are honored by me. B'mchubodim shili, those whom I honor, says Hashem. Kan Ramaz lo misas b'nei Aaron b'yom hakamasa. Here the Torah is hinting at the fact that on the day on which the Mishkan is dedicated, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the two sons of Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, are going to pass away. In other words, the way to read the pasuk is v'nikdash, I will be sanctified b'chvodi, with those people who are very honored. The deaths of these honored people is going to, in a sense, sanctify God's name, or sanctify the Mishkan, on the very day on which the Mishkan is being dedicated. Continues Rashi, v'zeu sha'amar Moshe. That understanding, that's what's hinted at here in the Pasuk, can help us understand what Moshe tells Aaron after Nadav and Avihu pass away in the beginning of Parashas Shmini. Hu asher diber Hashem leimor b'krov hayakodesh. Moshe says to his brother Aaron, you should know the deaths of Nadav and Avihu reflect that which Hashem has said previously, B'krov HaYekadosh, I will be sanctified with those who are close to me. Their deaths are a way of sanctifying Hashem's name precisely because they're such big tzaddikim. So what's hard, I mean, there are a lot of things that are hard to understand. I mean, for the whole concept of God being sanctified by the deaths of tzaddikim is a hard concept theologically to understand. But, you know, on a much more basic level, Moshe says to Aaron, Hu asher diber Hashem. You know, the deaths of Nadav and Avihu reflect what Hashem has already said. Where did Hashem say this? So, v'heichon diber, that's what Rashi writes. Where did Hashem make this statement, or anything like it, b'krov hayekadesh, that I will be sanctified by those who are close to me? Here, v'nikdash b'chvodi, I, or it, will be sanctified by those who are close to me. So it would seem as if the Targum Onkelos is using this Midrashic interpretation of Rashi to explain the Pshat, the simple interpretation of the Pasuk. Right? Rashi said the simple interpretation of the pasuk v'nikdash b'chvodi means that it, the Mishkan, will be sanctified with my glory. But the Targum Onkelos, by translating v'nikdash not as it will be sanctified, but rather es kadash, I will be sanctified, is essentially saying, the pasuk is saying, Hashem says, I will be sanctified b'chvodi through the deaths of those who are honored, who are honorable people. The Yonatan ben Uziel seems to say something very similar. He translates this pasuk as v'ikadash, I will be sanctified b'rabboneihon, through their great ones, begin yikari, on account of my glory. In other words, this pasuk is somehow hinting at the fact that great people are going to have to fall and unfortunately pass away, and that will lead to a sanctification of God's name. And, you know, that's being hinted at here in this pasuk, you know, right as the Mishkan is being described as being dedicated, right? It's not the obvious translation of the pasuk, but apparently the Targum Onkelos felt that was the simpler translation of the pasuk. That's the pshat in the pasuk. You know, not just an added layer of interpretation, but that's the pshat, the simple level of understanding it as well.
Ron, yeah. It's difficult to even formulate the thought or question on this, but what's the mechanism of sanctification? Death of two tzaddikim is sanctifying.
Right. So what does that mean, that God is going to sanctify? God is going to be sanctified, or the Mishkan is going to be sanctified by these tzaddikim passing away? You know, that seems like a very, very high price to pay. I think the simplest way to understand it, I mean, obviously in an incomplete way, is that Nadav and Avihu did something moderately incorrect. Again, what exactly they did is not clear, but they did something moderately incorrect, and there was a tremendous reaction from Hashem. You know, the punishment was much greater than the crime. And that was considered to be a Kiddush Hashem, because essentially it sent the message on the very day on which the Mishkan was dedicated, you know, God is a powerful force, and he holds his tzaddikim to exacting standards. Now, that's not a lovey-dovey, you know, kiruv type of message. You know, come to our Mishkan, come where tzaddikim die. You know, it's not a fuzzy, you know, it does give you like a fuzzy warm feeling inside, but it does convey some of the awesomeness of Hashem and some of the demands that Hashem has for people to live up to. That's called a Kiddush Hashem. You know, it's a Kiddush Hashem in the narrow sense of the term. It sanctifies God's name because it shows us, you know, that God has very high expectations. We're not dealing, you know, with a pushover. We're dealing with an all-powerful God. And it's important for us to realize that as the Mishkan. Yes, we paid a terrible price for realizing that, but nonetheless, it's still an important, important message for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give over, you know, on that day. Yeah.
It's just saying that the closer you get to Hashem, the cost gets higher.
Right. So, but the reward also gets higher. You know, the cost in this world gets higher.
The cost in this world gets
the reward
higher.
In the next world gets much higher.
I'm not disputing.
Right. Right, but it conveys that idea. Yeah. Okay, we'll pick up over here. Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer Ratzah Kodesh Baruch Hu Lazakos.